Good morning. Call to order the 86th meeting of the New Jersey Highlands Board of Protection and Planning Council. My name is John Weingarten. County, and I'm delighted to introduce our newest member, Mike Francis, joins us here today. And ask to introduce themselves.
Liz Cal, Chris Burden, County Freeholder.
Eric Peterson, Hiring County Freeholder.
Bill Cogger, Bear, Chester County.
Amy Les, Precipity, Morris County.
And on the phone, we have
Matt Schreider, Morris County.
Jackie Kovac, County Clinton County.
Wes Petrano, Sussex County Freeholder.
Okay, and
Don Wynette, Public Member, Morris.
Tracy Kirk, PR Public Representative, Burden County.
This meeting has been advertised in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. Would you please rise to the pledge of allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have in our packets the minutes from our last meeting on June 25th. Is there a motion to approve the minutes? Mike, do us a second. Mike, I think. Okay. Any comments or questions on the minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Any opposed? Liz abstains. Any other abstentions? Okay. The minutes are approved.
I'm sorry, John, we had one interruption. Paul is trying to figure out. Liz is an abstention.
Right.
Other than that, all members have approved.
I believe, yes. There's no other abstentions or everyone else voted yes on this. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yes. Just report on a couple things. The next scheduled meeting of the council has been changed from what was originally our schedule adopted in the beginning of the year. So the next meeting of the full council will be on August 27th at 1:00. Between now and then, the Highlands Development Credit Bank Board will meet on August 6th. And for our agenda today, because some members have obligations and they're going to have to leave before the meeting is over, probably we're going to move the voting items up to next. There are no local grants to consider today, so item 8 is done. Items 9 and 10, which are the two other voting items, move up to be next. And before we do that, do any other council members have matters to report? Anyone on the phone? Okay. And then let's move to item 9, the contract for lakes management and stream corridor facility.
Thank you. We had reported out to you before when we released these RFQs. They were released with a due date of June 12th. And these were a lake management and stream restoration protection plan RFQs. We received 7 proposals. The staff review committee evaluated proposals through our normal process. We have a sort of scoring sheet that we go through. We do this independently. Then the team meets together to discuss the proposals. After reviewing and evaluating those proposals, the team unanimously recommends to the council that Princeton Hydro of Ringgoes, New Jersey, receive a contract for an amount not to exceed $95,000 for this project. Princeton Hydro has extensive experience in both lake management and stream restoration, including many projects within the Highlands region. They've worked with clients in state, county, and municipal government, as well as the private sector, ensuring an understanding of both public purposes and development design issues. Staff considers this project to be central to the mission of the Highlands Council regarding both protection from development impacts and ecosystem restoration and enhancement. The guidance will support the development of lake management plans and stream corridor protection restoration plans. These are requirements in our regional master plan for municipalities that conform to the regional master plan. A resolution and supporting material is before you today, requesting action on this item.
We've got the resolution in packet. Would you like to introduce the resolution?
Mr. Chairman, I'm introducing the motion to approve the item.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Questions? Anyone, council members on the phone, have comments or questions on this resolution?
Questions? No. No questions.
Okay. Are there any public comments? Sir.
David Schill, I own a piece of the screen. How does this affect me? I would like to see a copy of the contract. I'd like to see how extensive it is in terms of intrusion on private property. When can I expect to see a copy? Right after the executive session.
Is there other? Hand in there? Yes.
Julia Sanders, New Jersey Harvest Coalition. Princeton Hacker is an excellent organization with an extremely good reputation. And they do, as you mentioned, a lot of work in the Highlands. How do you make sure that there is no conflict here?
Thank you. You're welcome.
But the issue of conflict is a serious one, and I'd like to hear it addressed. Thank you.
Are there other comments or questions? Your Tom, address the questions.
Can I, is it okay if John, Tom addresses the issue of potential comments?
Sure. We do a conference screening on our proposals for contracts, and in this particular contract, we'll be developing model guidance, not designed for a particular municipality. So, like many of our plan performance documents, it's designed to provide first times with a template that can be used to be tailored to the individual town. And then our planning grants will provide funding for the municipality to have their own consultants to tailor that model.
Thank you.
And in terms of Sheriff's question, what contract
we have? Right. This resolution authorizes the executive director to enter into a contract as soon as that contract is signed, and make that available to Mr. Sheriff.
Yes.
I just want to say that I hope that the lake management plans include the full spectrum of lake management that we discussed quite a bit earlier, but not just the water quality, but also the protection of the historic resources, the scenic resources, and the habitat, and so forth. Basically, up to the ridge lines, and that, you know, all that be considered. The lake considered as an entire entity, and that all the resources be considered in the planning process. Thank you.
Council comments or questions? Vote on the resolution. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Resolution carries. And then the next item on the agenda, the next resolution, item 10, CDR program entitled Rebuild Consultant.
Again, council members, we have reported out on this one. We requested RFQs on this one. The submittals were due on this project July 1st, 2009. We received 13 qualification submissions in response to the RFQ. The scope of the work under this RFQ includes the following items. I'll close those again for you. For purposes of TDR, for sending zone assistance to assist the council in the review of parcels to confirm eligibility for receipt of HDC allocation consistent with requirements of the regional master plan, to assist in the confirmation of municipal zone designations, bulk standards, and for non-residential zones, parking requirements in specific municipalities, as those requirements existed in 2004. This is a very important part of this contract. There's only, refers to a very small number of parcels that would be eligible in the region. However, we've done the bulk of the work when it comes to the residential parcels, but in terms of these non-res parcels, it's going to be very site-specific to understand what the potential was at the time of the Act, because you have to look at municipal zoning regulations in place in each municipality for those particular sites. So we did need some experts in doing this kind of work to assist us in that analysis. For non-res zoned parcels to also, in terms of that, to determine building footprint and gross floor area of the Pre-Highlands Act development potential. So these are those are some of the issues that we need assistance with. Also, from an economic perspective, to assist us in preparing a report detailing the amount of type of Pre-Highlands Act development potential that could have reasonably occurred on the parcel. In terms of receiving zone assistance, to assist us in determining HDC requirements to construct in TDR receiving zones through assessment of receiving zone project performance and underlying market economics. There was some more general to assist in planning initiatives necessary for implementation of TDR and also to assist with redevelopment planning. So we were looking for a firm that had that planning experience that could do an analysis of specific site conditions and opportunities under different municipal regulations. We're looking at experts in real estate evaluation from an evaluation perspective, and the third part then, redevelopment experience. So we did receive 13 firms, and again, went through the same process where we have an internal staff review team that evaluated proposals independently. And again, unanimously, the group, when we came back together, recommended the group Melbourne Design and its sub-consultants, Regional Plan Association, Langan Engineering, and Real Estate Solutions, Greenbaum, Rowan Smith. That was the team that was put together under group Melbourne. We're recommending that they receive the contract for an amount not to exceed $95,000 per project. The staff review committee selected Group Melbourne Design based on the team's significant planning, site plan development, TDR, land valuation, and redevelopment experience. GM Group Melbourne Design is conducting plan performance work for several municipalities in the Highlands region, and this gets to the issue that Julia brought up of potential conflicts. And as Tom explained, we always look at that. So we are asking in this resolution, because of potential conflicts with Group Melbourne Design, that in the event there is a conflict, that we would be allowed, the staff would be allowed to hire another firm that submitted a response to the RFQ on an as-needed basis for a specific project.
Mr. Chair, what's the time frame?
I'm sorry.
Use the mic. I think because of the air conditioning, we don't need to talk about the power.
What's the time frame that they'll be doing their work?
This is going to be on a time and materials basis. This one will stretch forward depending on need. The other one is
application by application.
Yes, some of it will be application by application.
Would someone like to introduce the resolution? Is there a second?
I'll second it.
How many projects are anticipated for $95,000?
We don't have a number in place, but we will. The $95,000 is sort of capped, but it'll be done on an as-needed basis. So we'll keep reporting out to you in terms of management of the grant. It will depend on the amount of interest and how many of those, how much assistance we need in terms of how many applications come in for those particularly non-res sites.
The $95,000 is the total amount authorized under this contract?
Yes.
A number of projects?
Yes.
Any members on the phone have questions or comments?
Liz Kelly.
Are there any public comments on this resolution?
Thank you.
Yes, Dave Piper, Association of New Jersey Environmental Commission. Just a clarification of the other firms that would be working with Group Melvin. Can you just repeat those again?
Are there other comments?
No.
All right, we'll get that. Thanks.
Harold Danielson, have these contracts been sent out for competitive bids? And if so, what would they say?
Helen Heinrich, New Jersey Farm Bureau. We have had experience with the Melvin Group and Woolrich TDR. That's very choice. We've got a lot of expertise and understanding of the issues with TDR. We would hope that you wouldn't wait to get an application to use them. If there is some way to bring them into your consideration of plan components concepts for you, and so that they can perhaps stimulate some of these towns to really seriously consider TDR. We think that would be a, you know, well worth an investment. So if we just wait until we have a fully white project, have any benefit of your expertise?
David Cho, and this again causes me to wonder where the line is between credit banking and the Highlands Council. It seems to be this should fall within the purview of the Hodges Credit Bank, but in fact, we all know that the Hodges Credit Bank shares the same staff, some of the same members as the Highlands Council. It's independence. And I would like an explanation as to why this matter is not before the Highlands Credit Bank, and instead.
First, I'd like to read out the names of the subcontractors again as requested. Group Melvin Design is the awarded the contract to IP Council. So besides the sub-consultants are Regional Plan Association, Langdon Engineering, and RES Group, that is Real Estate Solutions, and Greenbaum Rose Smith and Davis LLP. So those are the subcontractors. The second question we received was on competitive bidding, and I'd like to ask Tom to respond to that.
Sure, we did a request for qualifications for this proposal since it's going to be on a time and material basis. We're primarily interested in the qualifications of the bidders. We had 13 applicants who came in under the RFQ, and we did a competitive analysis for staff.
The question was, how was that made known to?
Well, the RFQ was published in newspapers, published on our website as well.
And then the final issue about responsibilities. These responsibilities fall under the purview of the Highlands Council.
Other council members, questions?
Just a question, Mr. Chair. Where is Langdon Engineering based? Do you know?
Can I do it based?
It works statewide.
Yeah, they're a regional firm. I don't recall where their home base is.
We do actually, in all of our, when we look at many of our consultants, we do look at that to make sure that the access is easy. But if you want us to check into that, get back to you.
Because the name is from the country, so I want to make sure that I have appropriately.
So, I recommend if there's any data, you have seen on
that. I'll follow the same. Thank you.
Other comments, questions? All those in favor of the resolution?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Abstentions.
Resolution carries. Well, that completed our last voting matter for this morning, but we have a number of important issues to discuss, so we'll go back to the executive director's report, 7 of the agenda.
Just want to bring you up to date on the planned conformance activities. We have currently 30 initial assessment grant reports received into the Highlands Council offices, and they're now being reviewed for completeness. Module 3, which is the development of housing elements of fair share plans, we're still working on guidance for that document in consultation with Council on Affordable Housing and the Division of Law. So we continue to work on that. However, municipalities are already working on their fair share plans because we didn't release sufficient information for them to get started on that, as the December 8th, 2009 date is required for those municipalities that have afforded the extension for their fair share plans. So we continue to work on module 3. Module 4 is the draft environmental resource inventories. As of July 7th, we have received 30 municipalities that sent in their information on that Highlands ERI, which is an environmental resource inventory for purposes of basic plan conformance. So they get those to us in draft format as part of the petition requirement for those municipalities that have preservation area lands for December 8th, 2009. For planning area, it depends on whether we decide to conform at that point or not. Module 5, municipalities have begun to work on that. That's the Highlands Master Plan elements, and that's based on the model that was posted June 2nd on our website, again, after we had taken public comment and worked with municipal professionals throughout the region on it. Module 6 is the work on Highlands ordinances, and that continues. As you know, we have draft ordinances in place. We continue to work on those to get them ready for release for the public to see them. And also, we will work with municipal professionals. Again, we've got a real team now out with municipalities, working with municipal planners, municipal engineers, and land use attorneys. So we'll have an opportunity for them to give us feedback on those ordinances. So that brings you modules 1 and 2, of course, are those build out modules. So to bring you up to date on the where we are with the build out work. We have started as of yesterday, and I know the public gives to this, to release build out results. These are final Highlands Municipal Report build out reports. They will be rolling out from now on. First, they go to the mayor and the professionals in the municipalities. They have a 10-day period in which to check them for any errors or issues that they want to bring to our attention. We let them know that then they become public. We put them on the website, and the public can then view them. So,
if I can just clarify, so the build-out analyses are an estimate of what could be built.
Correct. It's a planning tool. It's based on a vacant land analysis and then it's carrying capacity. So it's based on vacant land. It's also, we also look at net water availability in the natural systems. We look at infrastructure and capacity within infrastructure such as public water and sewer. And we apply the Highlands Regional Master Concept to yield. The first step of the process is a vacant land analysis. And we work with the municipalities in partnership on this exercise. What we do is we give municipalities everything we know about them at block and lot level. So whether we see land as preserved, whether we see it as developed, we give them all that information. They verify that information and give it back to us. So they bring us up to date on certain issues if development has occurred and we have it captured. They give us that information. If there are more buildings that are actually served by wastewater, they give us that information. So at the end of module 1, we have agreed on a vacant land analysis with the municipalities. It's all factual information. and it's being verified by them. Step two, that we also look at the septic system yield. So step two of the process really is where you apply the constraints of the regional master plan. So at the end of that, you have a build-out that's consistent with the regional master plan. It is split for preservation and planning area. So municipalities then really understand the implications of the plan as applied to their municipality. And they can base many planning decisions on that build-out. They can look at, for example, their wastewater planning, their water allocation plan, their affordable housing plan, their future master plan planning. So this is the planning to look all of those issues. In terms of the work, sorry,
can I ask a question about how build-out analysis? This is a general question. It has to do with the net water availability numbers. Towns that have a municipal water system and they use groundwater, they're limited by the DEP and the number of gallons that they're allowed to pump each month out of the ground. Have you taken that into consideration with your net water availability? Because that might be more rigorous than the numbers that you've developed, that we've developed.
I'm going to ask if Dan Van Abs would respond to that question, please. Thanks, Dan.
I'll come up here because it's a long room.
Dan, can you speak up as well, please? Sorry.
Yeah. The build-out report does deal with water utility capacity, which is based on water allocation permits. And in addition to that, the net water availability analysis that we did for the regional master plan. In some cases, the water utility capacity is more restrictive. In other cases, the net water availability is more restricting. And in some cases, neither one really restricts what the land-based development can be. So we have the full range of situations. We also look at the wastewater utility capacity. So we have any number of different possibilities as to what the limiting factor is. Sometimes it's land, sometimes it's wastewater, sometimes it's water supply utility, and sometimes it's net water. So
you take the most restrictive.
That's correct.
Maybe it would be good if that were defined or explained within the build-out analysis.
I hope it is. But we will see as we get reactions from the municipalities to the first report.
So as to how you balance out the DEP restrictions versus your analysis.
Again, maybe we did work with the professionals. We had them in the building for three sessions on municipal build-outs. So we worked with them, we worked through those issues and answered those questions. But I believe that the regional master plan, the Highlands Municipal Build-Out Report, should respond to those issues. Currently on the website, what we've done is we've released the actual report and table one, which is critical to that reading of that report. There's a lot of other information, technical information, supporting information that we haven't yet posted on the website, and the reason for that is technical difficulties due to the size of the files. We're zipping those files. They will be coming up, so there will be the full supporting documentation will be made public. Just want to let you know that, but there's an awful lot of information, there's some technical difficulties, but we will achieve that.
Thank you.
These exemptions are above and beyond, or I should say, for build-out projection is above and beyond the exemptions, the simple pre-existing exemptions. Is that correct?
Yeah, the build-out anticipates what would occur if the regional master plan were fully implemented, ignoring for now the exemptions that may occur. There's 17 exemptions in the Act. How many of those are actually become real isn't anticipated. But what we did do was it takes municipal conditions as it exists in the spring of 2009. So things that have been built today we accounted for. Build out for the future is based upon achievement of the regional master plan, and anything that comes that is exempt will come as it will.
So you're telling me that if a particular municipality has 70 lots that were in existence at the time of the enactment of the Act and had exemption 1 and 2 that would apply to them, that's not counted in the build out analysis?
Correct, because some of those landowners may not ever want to exercise that exemption. Some of those lands may be bought up as farmland, crop preservation, or open space. So we can't the build-out projection is based upon the master plan, the achievement of the master plan. What we also include in the master plan was methods such as the HDC and septic system yield to retire exemptions to ensure that exemptions are retired through those programs. So there's various mechanisms in the plan to actually retire exemptions to not project the actual build.
You can say the same thing for the projected build-out. Let's say that the projected build-out could be impacted by farmland preservation or through Green Acres acquisition or something. I mean, that's a, how does a municipality plan if you're excluding all that building that could potentially happen? It seems to me that's a,
yes,
something that's not connected.
It is a planning tool. It's a point in time that can be utilized. I think it's clear that as municipalities take next steps and approvals are issued or new farmland or open space is bought up, it will be continue to be updated. But the important part is that we supply towns with a parcel-based tool that they can continue to utilize to update and monitor and track land development in their town. So it's an important planning tool. Is it perfect? It's not.
If a town wants to estimate how much development could occur if they comply with what's in the bill of house, all the exemptions being realized, is that information available?
Well, the estimate, it's difficult to estimate all the exemptions. There's 17 different exemptions under the Act. We actually did in our initial regional build-out an estimate of exemptions, but even that, when we started running those numbers, we admitted freely that these estimates are very rough, and a lot of the information we have in terms of the tax data was rough and necessary to verify it. So we see that as an ongoing effort, but it really couldn't be achieved at a regional scale.
Just want to also verify some exemptions are included because all the land involved in exemptions is included in the analysis for septic system yield. There's also, in accordance with the regional master plan, how the yield is utilized by the municipalities is up to the municipalities, and we did allow for that septic yield to be used for exempt properties. So there's overlap in this. It isn't as simple as to say that they're simply not included. That all the land is included and taken into the analysis to allow for your septic system yield.
How does a town actively assess where they are if they don't understand how the existing plots would place and still have the capability of building a home? It seems to me that's a huge gap that a municipality should have built.
They do have every single block and lot through this build-out analysis, because it's done at that level, so they do have that information. This is really, it's as exact as it can be and as precise as it can be, because some of the, when you look at the exemptions, some of them will never be realized. So for example, even on exemptions 1 and 2, because of, for example, floodlots, etc., they may not be granted that exemption. So you can't simply say that every exemption, possible exemption, actually will realize an exemption. So that's where some of the analysis gets critical. But our build-out is based on capacity. So it clearly shows you the perspective of capacity of what can occur. Now, outside of that, some exemptions may occur that aren't captured in that capacity level. We recognize them because they are outside of the Act and the plan, because they are, in fact, exemptions. So they will occur outside of the Act and the plan.
If a town identifies maybe specific, you know, exemptions that they want to be incorporated into the plan, or other considerations that they find where they take exception to some of the conclusions that we've drawn, will we update these plans?
Well, the build-out numbers are a guide. Then we get into the actual planning of this, and that's where they get into abuse. As you say, towns have certain planning where they want to use that yield or that capacity that exists. They can use that yield in their planning and decide how to use it. We don't dictate that it has to be used on certain lands. We give them the capacity constraints. They decide how to plan for it. So if they have certain projects, certain issues, ways they want to address it, providing it's consistent with the RFP, they can utilize their yield.
Now, are these numbers going to impact people's code requirements?
Yes, they will.
See, that's why we have to find a way that towns can upgrade them if they find, you know, fault with the new one.
Well,
they'll upgrade it will be affecting the compliance purpose, performance purposes.
The way it works in terms of affordable housing planning is pursuant to the executive order 114 and the MOU with COA. What happens is and we're continuing to work coordinate with COA on this, but clearly for conforming municipalities, if they conform just for the preservation area for the entire area, for that conforming portion of the town, their projections will be adjusted to be in accordance with the regional master plan built, the Highlands Municipal Building. So their numbers were, but again, in terms of even COA, when they got projections from COA, that's again just a tool. Your actual obligation is determined on your growth. So this is again a planning tool, and now these municipalities will have the exact numbers from the Highlands Council in these plans. So they will understand that their projections for affordable housing, should they conform, will be these numbers from the municipal builder.
Well, we will adjust them if the municipality finds fault.
Well, the municipalities have already gone through the verification process of the factual information. What cannot be adjusted is are the regional master plan implications. So now they can go through an adjustment process, the map adjustment process, to make changes. There are going to continue to be R&P updates for factual information. But if the regional master plan prohibits something occurring, and that is being captured in the build-out, that's a de facto situation for conformance. But is there some room? Yes, this is a planning tool. It doesn't tell you where the growth occurs necessarily. You know, it's limited within 114 within zones, et cetera. So the plan is applied.
Analysis, I read it very quickly, the general capture of our planner and our zoning official is not ready yet, but the COA number was within 10% of what we forecasted prior to going into the process. I didn't see anything wrong with the analysis. Stuff again, I did a quick read, but so I'm very comfortable with the number that came out of the project. It wasn't highly inflated or minimal. It was about where we expected it to be.
So Bill, as a mayor, presuming for a moment that you're not sitting on this council, just for the first time, the absence of availability of the data there to know how many exempt lots exist, does that impact your ability
because
to make decisions, or do you feel it's accessible someplace else easily enough that it has no bearing?
I mean, we looked at the availability of the single-family lots in terms of your standard building. The reality is, your COA numbers are dependent upon what you actually do. So you really forecast where you're going, and you take a look at those numbers, and you look at the job growth. Now, Chester's unique because we don't have commercial energy, so we're not picking up jobs or factories or plants, so that you've got heavy calculations in the commercial sense. So it's actually pretty easy for us. We can look at fire trends. We can look at what the Islands Council's analysis has done. And it was within a few units difference than what we originally forecast. So I'm very comfortable with that. Haven't gone into the whole deal. I haven't sat down with our planner and our zoning official yet to see what their feedback is, but the initial number that I read, I was very comfortable.
So, Bill, your town is looking, you start looking at towns that have very heavy commercial part of their zoning, and then it gets a lot more questionable and more difficult.
I just also want to make sure clarify that municipal professionals were involved with us in this build-out. Now, when they get the final report, it is a Highlands report, and I anticipate more questions from the professionals and the municipalities regarding those final results. However, at the end of module one, you have agreed with municipalities on the analysis that took place at that time, then you start applying. But there's a lot of back and forth with the municipal professionals. Also, we made the staff that were actually working on this were made available to the municipalities for, you know, questions and issues arose, so that there was a lot of interaction with municipalities. And so in certain cases, some issues were addressed, concerns, and some verification. When we got the first verification back at the block level, we then gave a report back to the municipality. Some of them came back with even more information after that, two or three times, saying we just, you know, updated this information, or we just found out that this has been preserved since. Once they verified that for us, we kept changing it. So there's been a lot of back and forth with municipal professionals.
So these numbers are strictly being produced for the purpose of determining COA?
No.
They do go beyond it.
Yes, very much. This is the build out has many areas where it can be utilized, such as wastewater planning, such as water allocation, and your master plan, where into the future you think it's appropriate to apply that yield. This was not done for affordable housing. That's a part of it, but that's the regional master plan. In fact, it was from the Highlands Act itself. It said that a resource assessment had to be done, and after the resource assessment was done, there had to be an analysis in terms of the sustainable development of the region that could occur while protecting the resources that you've done the assessment of.
This is the foundation for my question. The build-out analysis identifies 15 possible buildings, but the municipality has 60 lots in existence that are eligible for exemption 1 and 2. Doesn't it have to be figured in some place? Because if everybody exercised those exemptions, which they have the absolute, as long as those lots bring performance with municipal standards of 2004, they can build on it. Which means there's more septic load, more water load. Where does that all fit into the calculation? That's where you're losing the interest.
Well, the build-out responds to the Act and the plan in terms of what can occur in the region under capacity constraints under the plan. The exemptions are outside of that process. They aren't governed by the Regional Master Plan, nor are they governed by the Act, nor are they governed by conforming municipalities' ordinances. If you look at every lot that possibly is eligible for an exemption, you do not know if it will achieve an exemption until it goes through that process.
But my first question, if the town wants to estimate how many, what's going to happen to their school age population in 5 years or 10 years, they would have to look at the build-out analysis and do some estimate of what's going to happen with exemptions to come up with the amount of growth they're likely to have.
And some of those exemptions that we say they are considered in terms of, for vacant land, goes into the analysis for septic yield. So it is included in the build-out to that extent, because it becomes part of how you decide on what the capacity is for the future under our septic system analysis. So it does, you know, under the nitrate system that we set forth, it does go in to the analysis for build-out. So it's included, but not to the level where you go and try to count each one, because again, it's outside of the plan. But what municipalities would do, this is as detailed a build-out, best of my knowledge, and has ever occurred. So they have this detail, and then they can go to another level to look at what the potential is. And we encourage them to do that in the master planning process, because that's where they decide where the application of their yield goes to. Because they can apply yield to exceptions. However, as I said before, those exceptions are outside the controls of the Act and the plan.
So how does that impact your ability to get a sewage rules for DEP? If only one quarter of the total available units that could be potentially built in this lot are identified as build-out analysis. But all these people exercise their rights to build all those lots. Where's the capacity come from, and how do they get the approval for their capacity?
Could you identify who just asked that question?
It's Kirk, Jack. It's Kirk.
Okay, Jack.
Yeah, but essentially the exemptions 1 and 2 are dealing with vacant land where a single family dwelling can be built, most cases with a well or a septic system. Exemption number three, for example, may be prior approvals where an extension of a sewer line for a 50-unit development could be built. That particular exemption expires if construction activities don't continue ongoing. So there's a lot of theoretical exemptions that may be exercised or may not be. But to answer your specific question, the exemptions one and two, because they're reliant upon primarily septic system and wells, they are not going to be needing a DEP water allocation permit for that well, nor are they going to be needing a permit to discharge other than just your normal health department approval for the septic system. So what Eileen was alluding to is the fact that the plan does account for and allows municipalities to plan for the recognition of those exemptions in their allocation of the yield. So we provide a town, say you have a septic yield for new septic units for 50 units. The town can plan for the potential use of those exemptions and essentially retire that yield.
Let's move on and come back to this.
And in terms of numbers, to bring you up to date, 17 of the build-outs results are currently on our website as of today. And as I said, it will keep rolling them out as we do the work. 28 have been completed in full. 17 of those are on the website. That means that those remaining ones are at municipalities after the 10-day period, we post them. There are 11 further MOD2s back to us from the towns, so we're working on those. So those 11 should be completed, and we'll go through the same process of being released to the towns and then put on our website. Because different towns came in at different times into this process, and also because of the difficulties and complexities associated with some, this is going to be an ongoing process where we're completing them with others, so we keep working. We have 15 MOD 2 reports ready to go out, because we're in the process of working on those still with municipalities, and a further 10 behind those. And then in terms of some towns are still on MOD 1, they've submitted the information to us, we're getting it back out to them. So there's a number involved at that level as well. And that brings you up to date really on where we are in the process, so it will continue to unfold and roll out these numbers over the next couple of months. Some towns are only very recently gotten into the process. The timelines, many towns aren't on that December 8th deadline. They're not associated with it because if they're planning area municipalities, entirely planning area municipalities, they don't have that deadline. The question is, do they have the COA deadline? But we're working with them as fast as we can for all municipalities. That brings you up to date on the MOB, the MOB 1 and 2, the build out work.
Can I ask one more question? The municipality, every single lot in the municipality that has exemptions in order to decide to exercise those rights and build out. That does not impact build out number that you assign right now?
The build out number is a tomb. It's what we foresee under the regional master plan can occur. The build out, including exemptions, may exceed that. And also into the future, if there are opportunities to address capacity in wastewater and water, there is a potential for more growth than is seen today under the current capacity established in this build-out. We recognize that this is a tool to start planning off from now to allocate your yield to address issues such as exemptions. But that's all it is, it's a tool. And indeed, the future may change depending on other conditions.
And the first part is the realization of exemptions could use up some of the capacity that the build-out analysis realized.
Could use it up and might even exceed.
This is a topic that we'll discuss later.
Okay, and that really concludes that part of the executive director's report, but we did have another matter for discussion today, and that is the conservation restriction language purposes of transfer and development rights program. Where we are on that is we've initially released some language, draft conservation restriction language for public comment and received much public comment. We revised the documents again based on the comments received and divided the conservation restrictions into four separate restrictions. We then received more comment on that language, and the purpose of today, what I ask you to do is we did give you some feedback on the comments received on the last draft. We are still waiting for comments from the state agency. We've asked to comment on these. So the purpose of today's conversation, we're asking you if you look at the documents that we sent you and the documents so that you can give us your feedback, so that again we will post the revised document up onto the web for everybody to see, such that you can make your decision in August, I think is what we're looking at, making your final decision. If this is, again, the role of the Highlands Council to adopt the language with a conservation restriction. We did receive comments from the HDC Bank Board, particularly one member gave us comments that they have been incorporated into the document we gave you with comments, and changes have been made that we that we sent out to you in response to those comments. So today, the purpose is to get any more comments from you so that we can again revise that document.
So, aside from comments we want to bring up now, would be comments from members.
The next HBC Bank Board meeting is the 6th. We would like to be able to show them the revised language, just so that they could see it and so that it would be available by that time. So I think by the end of next week, perhaps.
In the process going forward, is the HBC Bank Board have the benefit of those comments and the staff's analysis of them and can comment on that draft. Council that have those comments. Our next meeting is to consider when we consider adopting the resolution.
That's correct.
Yeah. Questions or comments?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anything at the end of your report?
Yes.
Before we turn to public comments, are there any other matters council members want to bring up?
I have a question that kind of relates to questions as far as the public and the relationship between TDR and the Highlands Council. And it might be a good idea at some point in time to clarify that. My understanding that we're the only ones that can spend money. In all contracts, I suppose, they have to come to us. And I might be wrong, that's my understanding. We should clarify this.
What we did for the HTC Bank Board was we actually did a PowerPoint where we showed the sort of the authorities of the council with regard to the GDR program and the authorities of the HTC Bank, their role and responsibility. For the next meeting, if you like, I'll prepare that for the council so that you can see it and better understand where, whose authority is whose.
And
it's
a public understanding.
Right.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea in context for adopting that region.
Question, Tom. Exemption 4 that allows the reconstruction of existing buildings up to 125%. So if bedrooms were added, it would then add more effluent to the equation for septic size or going into a sewer system. Building permit could never be denied on the basis of septic capacity. That exemption, is that a true or false statement?
That's true. If it's an exempt activity, it's not going to be subject to the regional master plan, nor will it be subject to an ordinance that's updated to conform to the regional master plan. The way I would look at exemptions is much like municipalities look at variances and waivers, is that a town does a master plan and does an ordinance, but of course the planning board's going to be granting exceptions and waivers. So that will occur. So you need to update your plans to say what has occurred. But your projections are the best projections you can make at this time.
One of the things we discussed very early on
when we were creating was how do we confidently pass exemption knowledge and authority to local zoning officials and building departments. How are we doing with that? You know, one of the things I hear a lot from constituents is, I go to my municipality, nobody really seems to understand the exemptions that are allowed, or they understand them, but they're really afraid to make a decision, so I end up having to go through the whole big process that I'm supposed to be exempt from in the first place.
Well, currently what's happening is in the preservation area, it is Department of Environmental Protection who's ruling on those exemptions. Exemption one, generally speaking, is not going through the department. That's the right to build on a lot, a residentially zoned lot in existence at the time of the Act by the current owner or the owner at the time of the passage of the Act or the immediate family. Exemption number two, however, does go through the Department of Environmental Protection, their analysis, and that's because under exemption number two, it's when that piece of property is sold to a new owner, and there are two restrictions that apply. An acre of disturbance and a quarter acre of impervious surface is all that is allowed. And thus, the rest of the land has to be deconstructed, thus it has to go through a process. We agree with you, Kurt, and what the master plan intended to occur in terms of the planning area, as they go through conformance, they would be under the purview of the Highlands Council to rule on exemptions, as we saw, and the plan recognises the opportunity to give certain of those exemption rulings to under the authority of the local municipality. So, for example, that exemption number two, once the town has gone through the conformance process and has gone through the business of making sure all their ordinances are updated consistent with the plan, they could take over those authorities, and they're well qualified to do so with their abilities in that area. And we also have recommended that the Department of Environmental Protection consider the same approach for the preservation area, with certain exemptions. And part of the process we anticipate going through the conformance process is making sure that the municipalities will be equipped to do so. I know that those officials come under the purview of the DCA. So we would make sure we coordinated with DCA as well for those the officials that would be involved in making these determinations. But right now, I admit, it depends on the municipality you're talking to, but their comfort level with this, and we see this a lot when we go out to the municipality to talk. I think as we get through this conformance process, it will become clearer. And then in terms of working with the Department of Environmental Protection as well to see if they will, like we anticipate doing under conformance in the planning area, participate handing over some of those controls to local municipalities.
I believe under the Act, exempt properties, you just have the impervious coverage. You have the impervious coverage and you have the disturbance area. It's if you talk to them, they don't have to approve that. It's just if you go to them, that's a safe haven route that they do the calculation and gives their blessing. If you go to your town and the town can approve and issue building permits, as long as they do their calculations and say that you're within it, you take a risk, which but the town can grant permits under that, but the owner of the property who's going to build the house on it takes the risk that they have too much impervious coverage or too much disturbance of the area. And quite frankly, there's a detriment to going to DEP in that then you have to de-restrict the areas of disturbance and impervious coverage forever on property. If you don't go, then you don't have to do that. You just take the risk that if you go over that threshold that you're going to have a problem because you violated the Act. And so what I think needs to be told to the towns is that they can issue the permits. They should just make the property owner aware that if they violate the Act, they could run into a problem that they would have to rectify. But they do not have to go through the process of the DEP, and they do not have to have the property de-restricted for perpetuity on where it is. There's
there's a lot of drawbacks to doing that. It's a matter of the property owner's comfort level. And Kurt is absolutely right, because there are some towns who understand this and issue the permits. And then there are other towns who think that the DEP has to approve it and send everybody through the process. And there should be some clarification maybe to the municipalities that they can grant the permits, but they should caution the person that they proceed at their own risk of exceeding the impervious coverage in the surface area.
Thank you for that, Eric. I think I will ask Tom to weigh in terms of actually granting an exception, because I think Dean has been very strict in saying that they actually grant an exception. With that exemption number two, when we talk about deed-restricting the rest of the land, the danger here is that an owner of that land and future owners must understand that, in fact, the rest of the land must be restricted, because you can't in the future disturb the rest of that land, because the exemption only allows for maximum 1 acre disturbance and 1/4 acre impervious. Lacking a deed restriction, the danger is that owner later may choose to build another building or something else in the impervious surface that is outside of that 1/4 acre, which is why, if you go through the process of making sure that the rest of the land is deed restricted, because it's the future infringements on that exemption that might occur. So I think what really is germane here is what you said, it's the risk for that landowner if this process isn't done in the correct manner. This gets back to, I think, making sure that the municipal officials, should they take over this task, are aware that that 1/4 acre impervious and an acre of disturbance is in perpetuity, that no more can occur on that piece of land. And that's the danger here in saying that you can grant a permit without going through the exception analysis that does indeed restrict the rest of the land.
Well, that's a safe haven, but the reality is that every piece of property has certain restrictions. You wouldn't deed restrict it, because they could change over time, depending on zoning issues and so forth and so on. So everybody who buys a piece of land anywhere in New Jersey runs those risks as well. This act is no different, and we don't make those people deed restrict their properties either, nor do they have to. They just have to meet the zoning guidelines that are set for that period of time. And it's incumbent upon the person purchasing the property, doing the construction, that they act within the statute of regulations, which is the same as if they were building a house outside the Highlands, or they were building whatever outside the Highlands. And somewhere else, they'd have to be within setbacks and so forth and so on, and there might be wetlands mediation. That's part of the process, and it's part of what I see in the restrictions that you want to set forth that we're presenting today, is that I think we're overstepping our bounds. This is a normal course of business in real estate transactions, that the buyer has a due diligence responsibility, and there's going to be part of that due diligence is to know what the zoning is on their property. Anybody who buys a house, every transaction, or they're buying a commercial property, it sets forth that they have an opportunity to go and check the zoning to make sure it agrees with what their intended uses are for the property, to see what easements and restrictions are on the property prior to the purchase of the property. And I put in all my contracts that they have this opportunity, because there are times where somebody wants to pull the backyard and they can't, because there's some easement for a utility or setback issue or something along these lines. And so it's incumbent upon the property owner to do their due diligence. I think we somewhat overstep our bounds, and it was noted in here that we're requiring that they take all these steps beforehand in the transaction. It's part of the transaction. They're going to do a title search, unless they're foolish. They're going to pick up the easement when they do the title search. They're going to find out what those limitations are. They're going to know they're in the Highlands, because they're going to go, they should know what the zoning area is if they're going to be building something before they go ahead and build it. And they're going to know all this before they consummate the transaction. And for us to require that we give them notice and we do all these other things as part of the transaction is onerous, because the already the accepted practice and the way that we operate in New Jersey in real estate transactions, all these issues will be vetted out as part of the due diligence period during the contracting. And then there's going to be an insurance company, if they're wise and take out title insurance, which almost everybody does. There's going to be a title insurance company that are going to get a title binder. It's going to point out all the restrictions and easements on the property. And those, and they're going to get a copy, their attorney, or they're going to get a copy that's going to be made to them, so that they're aware of it prior to. And then there's going to be insurance. If the searcher misses it, then they have a cause of action against the title company. We're adding too many steps, but I've dealt with the DEP on this exception issue, and they will tell you that they don't need to give you their blessing, and that if you go through it, then they're going to require the deed restrictions. Otherwise, the town can issue the permit, just as long as you don't do the, as long as you're performed with the exception. And I think we're doing an injustice, I agree with Kurt, we're doing an injustice to people to make them go through the DEP process and not notifying the towns that they have the ability to issue the permits. And it's the builder beware on that.
Well, we'll continue to coordinate with DEP, because we certainly don't, we don't tell people where they have to go in terms of preservation. It's on the DEP in the planning area. I think what we wanted to get to was exactly what you're saying, is making sure that the ordinances and everything is in place such that these transactions can occur within the municipality without going, in that case, it would be through us, because DEP wouldn't be involved. So we'll certainly do that. And I would ask, Eric, in terms of the conservation restriction language, if you get your comments to us.
I'll go to it. I read through these comments that were, yep, supplied to us. I went through them. And, this just happens to be an area that has some
absolutely
high level of knowledge. And there were some very good comments made here. And what I gathered was that some of them, both on the comment side and our reply side, there is some misunderstanding about how real estate transactions actually work and what how it all functions. And we can make this a lot simpler and a lot more friendly to everybody involved in the transaction, which I think is a big concern for landowners. And it as will be for future owners down the road, and the towns and the council itself.
So if you get I thank you for
that. Yes. I could just say that the opening paragraph of exemptions law seems to say it all. The following are exempt from provisions of this act, the regional master plan, any rules or regulations adopted by the Department of Environmental Protection pursuant to this act, any amendments to a master plan, development regulations, or other regulations adopted by a local government unit to specifically conform with the regional master plan. So I don't even see how there's a division between planning and preservation area. It says point blank, you have the right to do it, and the DEP doesn't even have the right to pass rules or regulations impacting your right to do it. So how can we turn around and suggest that a landowner has to go to the DEP to get permission to be exempt, when it says here that the regulations adopted by the DEP have no impact?
I think the issue is to make sure that the applicant is eligible for that exemption. That's the issue. It's because not everybody can just go ahead and say, well, I'm working on the basis that I have an exemption. It has to be an approved exemption.
So just which municipalities can do it? All these cases, in many of these cases, the municipality can absolutely do it.
And that I would ask.
And it depends on the exemption. For good examples, the exemption the council considers at this last meeting, the exemption of the utility line going through the Highlands region, we would not want piecemeal exemption determination by all the towns that the utility goes through. However, so some of the exemptions are proper to be delegated, and that's actually what the master plan provisions. That group performance would be delegated to a municipal approval, and as Eric said, then the municipal approval would make it very clear the limitations of the use of that land.
But I know with exemptions and other laws, it's also the case that the take the single family house, the landowner can go ahead, as Aaron was saying, and do that. They may need some municipal sign-off and municipal building officials, both on the security of DEP having sanctioned that something. But if municipal building officials comfortable with that, that can be the end of the process.
And that's why a specific delegation, where those 10 want to do it, to make it very clear that that town has the authority, because right now, DEP maintains in the preservation area, towns do not have the authority to issue an exemption determination, which is fair. But with the plan envisions that that would be delegated to conforming municipalities to make it above
the
criteria.
The law is silent in terms of issuing an exemption, you either are or you aren't. So I don't understand how the DEP can establish itself as being the entity that determines exemption or not when it defines what the exemptions are here and it specifically says if you're there, the DEP can't stop you. So it almost is as if DEP wants it both ways. They want to be able to, we're exempting you, but you still have to come to us to be exempt.
But they only require it when you need a DEP permit. So when a DEP permit is required, they do require exemption determination. If it's not, as Eric said, DEP does not mandate. I would agree with you, but the fact that some of the exemptions aren't self-implementing, that they require an analysis like the PSCG determination, some of the other exemptions actually require an analysis. It's not just a thumbs up or thumbs down. I think delegation is the key, is that we're towns that want to assume that authority, that delegating the appropriate exemptions to the municipalities, to those officials to make determinations so that a land use approval by the planning board would be all inclusive, would deal with the land use approval at the zoning level in terms of the master plan, in terms of the ordinances, and whether or not it's exempt. And have that one resolution be very clear on.
We can fix it for the planning area. In terms of the preservation area, it will require further coordination with the Department of Environmental Protection. The other thing we hear from the building officials and the municipalities is they want to be, they're not comfortable with the situation as it is today. Many of them are not comfortable making those decisions. They want the delegation and they want to know exactly what the rules are that apply. And that's why I said I think we should also work in coordination with DCA in terms of making sure the training is done. That everybody, but for us, in terms of performance, because we're working with those municipalities very closely with their professionals and their elected officials, we see a way to resolve these issues. We need to coordinate more with the department when it comes to conforming municipalities' preservation area plans.
So I want to make sure I understand what you said, not to be over, but there's going to be two sets of protocols, one in the preservation area, one in the planning area, if the town chooses to conform, then they could possibly be authorized to implement whatever planning and zoning and other land use tools that they feel competent to do. And in the preservation area, it would be the DEP.
Well, we
when it
would
comes have, to making exceptions.
We would, in some cases, it certainly will be for some of these exemptions. In other cases, we anticipate, and it's what we said in the plan, anticipates that those authorities will be taken over by the town in certain cases. Now, we'll have to coordinate with the DEP in terms of their agreement that the town can take over some of those in the preservation area.
Because I understand that there's a big issue with homeowners. There's a bigger issue with people trying to understand that they haven't lost control of their ability to plan and affect the future of their community. Particularly in a community that's wrestling with the conform and not conform decision. And I think the more confident they can be that they're going to be either empowered or authorized when the right plan is in place, I think there will be a higher comfort level in that case. But they're still, you know, they're still in charge of their destiny, if you will, and not Big Brother.
And
I think that the bottom line is what's happening.
That's exactly right, Michael. That's how we anticipate and how the council determined in the plan. That the authorities, once the town is conforming and has done its ordinances, that the town is in the best position to serve its residents in that manner. But there are, as we say, certain exemptions that are larger than the utility lines and other ones that would not become the authority of the municipality, but certainly some of them could. And that's what we anticipate, so you're absolutely correct in your analysis.
I just fail to see where the differentiation is in the law between preservation and planning area in terms of the oversight of the DEP regarding exemptions. I think it's fabricated somewhere down in Trenton. I think they're beyond what their legal authority is, and I think that should be, we should be standing up for the rights of landowners in regards to these exemptions, that they not have to be put through the bird, going down to that cesspool, and trying to extract exemptions for something that they absolutely have the right to do. That's exactly what the legislature intended. They put these in so these people could relatively easily continue to live their lives without having to have this tremendous bureaucratic load put on their shoulders. And we're turning right around, placing this huge burden right back on them. It's wrong. So there you go.
Thank you, Chris.
Okay. Other comments this time? Turn to public. Anyone in the public who would like to speak this time?
A woman Fry, New Jersey Conservation Foundation. I would just like to make a few comments on the general the TBR conservation restriction aspect. We have a number of experts who work for New Jersey Conservation Foundation, and they have provided me with this information. Basically, the basic point would be to ensure that the values that we assume are protected by having the landowner receive the credit would in fact be protected through this easement, and there are both substantive and procedural provisions. I will just mention a few. One of the major substantive provisions that we'd like to see is this one. The Highlands Act created, required the creation by the council of incentives to create an impervious cover limit of a maximum of 5% in agricultural land, and we think that this conservation restriction and the agricultural easements would be an opportune time to develop this program, because there is already an incentive, which is the TDR credit, and so the public would then benefit by having the impervious cover restriction incorporated into the conservation restriction. So we would really like to see that happen. I mean, it seems like a really opportune time, because there is this built-in incentive already. And if you want to create an incentive for this program, other than the TDR, some other programs. So this would be a very good time to incorporate this. And the Act does direct the council to do that, to develop incentives for this impervious cover limitation. Another point that was made was that it should be clear that all the development rights are retired on the land that has received the conservation restriction, including the ability to mitigate for things like TV habitat, so that there is not actually double dipping. If developers want to mitigate on some land, they should do it on other land which is not already there restricted. There needs to be a clear statement of what actually is restricted and what is permitted. And I think in some cases it says whatever is permitted under the Highlands Act, but it seems as though it needs to be clarified in the conservation restriction itself what the remaining permitted uses are. In terms of procedural aspects, right now the easement requires a 24-hour notice to inspect, and in emergencies there should be a provision for immediate access. There should also be a baseline, either in narrative form or perhaps accompanied by maps, as to what actually exists at the time the easement is created, like what are the structures, how many structures, what drives, and what are the forested areas, even though in the if there's a forest management plan, anything that's done according to the forest management plan would be permitted, but there still should be a baseline of what actually exists on the site that might, that would be affected by the restriction, so that there's some kind of a comparison. I mean, it's very hard to tell what a violation might be baseline. Then let me see, we're beginning to get into the legal details here.
Could you submit these comments to the right?
I will invite them up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Monique Purcell from the Agriculture. Just a couple of things. One is I really appreciated the conversation about the towns and how they handle exemptions, because there are many towns that require landowners to have a HAD or a final typically applicability determination before issuing a permit. So it is a big problem. I think it's been a problem for quite a while. It's actually something we brought to the DEP's attention. Something like, well, we're not requiring it, but if they come to us, we'll go through the process. So I think clarifying that would be a really important thing to do. Just following up on Wilma's comment about incentives for impervious cover on farmland, that was something that was charged the SADC to do, and they are doing that primarily through the Farmland and Rangeland Protection Program money from the federal government. So those incentives are in place in other program areas. We would surely ask you not to add more layers to the TDR conservation restrictions that currently exist. And I urge you to really take some time with these documents. They're very critical to the potential success of the TDR program. And I think Mimi's point about roles and responsibilities of the council and the bank board, they're separate and distinct, but very important that they work together in concert, because the document that you approve as a conservation restriction will then be the tool they have to try to implement and develop the TDR program. So please spend some time with them. I appreciate the fact that now the council can take a good look at them, provide comments, and that the TDR bank will be able to look at your comments and deliberate on those before it's brought back to you again. So I appreciate that they're being part of the process. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Dave Pfeiffer. I'm with the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. I'd like to speak with you about a number of issues that have been discussed this morning. First one, the subject of exemptions. We've identified this as a major problem in the towns, trying to figure out what to do. It's very interesting that the build-out analyses don't include the exemptions. At some point, somebody needs some planning assistance and some guidance about determining what the degree and location of exemptions are in their community. And I believe that the 2004 tax cap is probably the most valuable document ever contained in the back closet of the town. So I would hope that you would perhaps issue a technical paper on determining exemption impacts, methodology for doing that, for towns to use. We have two levels of concern. One is a planning level of concern, and I think you're good with that. Your documents that are coming out are fine from a planning perspective. But then we get to the administration issue. And that's the kind of question that Kurt's bringing up in how does an owner know? And how does a municipality know that this is a legally exempt property? This has been a problem since the beginning of the act. I remember being bludgeoned to death in Ringling over this issue. And right. So please, hopefully, give the town some guidance as to how to determine exemption impacts in their master plan. The next issue is related to the ordinance development that you're going to be doing. I think we're, as an organization, very concerned that these mod ordinances get developed by experts for experts or by attorneys for attorneys, that the public is not involved in the preparation of the model, and they're handed a document that has to be tailored, chewed, and manipulated in such a way that it's politically acceptable. So please give some thought to an enhanced public participation process in ordinance development. I know towns that have tried for 20 years to institute clustering and found it impossible politically to do. Those kinds of things will impact importance. Next issue is conservation restrictions. Very nervous condition in my mind about conservation restrictions throughout the whole RMP, throughout the Act. There are many conflicting or complementary goals and objectives that are supposed to be achieved by conservation restrictions, and there's a limited availability of energy and money to administer a system that would guarantee the public's rights in those easements. We need to think very clearly about what these easements are supposed to be doing, and then design a system that's workable, feasible with the resources you have. You can write the world's best with a bulletproof easement agreement and find that there's nobody there that understands it 20 years ago. So it's almost an appropriate technology exercise. You have a document related to the system of administration that's going to come forth. Other things about the restrictions are very interesting. We have constantly found that the bundle of rights that the landowner has by law is increasing in size. How in the world do we accommodate something like a TD or a weapons mitigation tank application on a piece of property that's already got restriction? And if you think about this, in the field of conservation easements, these things are rolling out rapidly. Whether it's mitigation banking, endangered species banking, any number of other possible things coming down the road that have to do with the retained rights of the landowner versus the restriction which has stripped some rights. So you need to think about the near-term future and the longer-term future. And the last item on that subject is the subject of energy facilities. We're seeing legislation constantly coming forward allowing the installation of solar and wind units. My personal belief is that on farmland you already have that right. So legislators apparently disagree with that. But more and different kinds of energy facilities are going to be proposed. Think about that when you're thinking about what the restrictions for you. And the last thing is a question really to Tom about local authority. In the case where we have a bunch of reserve properties in the municipality, the municipality does it still have the right to administer those properties outside of the Highlands Act? Does it still retain its full land use authority to administer those properties, provided that the administration is not based on an ordinance that is linked to the Act? In other words, if the town wants, understand my question. So I'll take the answer offline. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
Helen Heinrich again, Jersey Farm Bureau. I find myself in a rather awkward position because there's another draft of these conservation restrictions out there. I haven't seen yet, and I hope that at least after this meeting, line so that perhaps we can send you some more comments by the end of next week too. Because if you've seen our comments, you can see that there's an awful lot that needs to be redone in these conservation restrictions. We're very interested in this whole discussion today about exceptions, because one of our big problems with deeds is why would you, in the deeds for people who are willing to give up their exception, why would you put all these onerous prohibitions on the board? Nobody's really explained that to me. And it seems to us that this is the biggest disincentive that you could make to get people to do that. The list of prohibitions comes from an old statute, and it doesn't apply anymore to agriculture, forestry, or even implementing the RMP. And I think you should take a look. We've said you should come up with your own language. Don't use the 13:8B Conservation Historic Preservation Act. It's outdated. It isn't going to serve you very well at all. For example, we have a lot in the RMP about ecotourism and agritourism. And many of those prohibitions would make that impossible. Are you saying that you can't have those kinds of activities on lands in the preservation area? I think you really need to think through what you're going to restrict. And after all, giving up an exception can mean a lot of money to the landowner. Your own chart we saw here for the value of the lot under the TDR program, anywhere from nearly $32,000 a lot to $354,000 a lot, which when a landowner is going to give up the exception, that's value that they should not be further restricted without more than one credit or some kind of compensation. So we are looking forward to many changes, I hope, in the drafts, but you really need to do some serious thinking. Thank you very much for the opportunity for the bank to look at this again, because they were really not comfortable at all with these deeds. Thank
you. My name is Deborah Post, and I would like to comment on some of the discussions earlier on exemptions before I make comments. I appreciate the courtesy just extended to all the previous speakers to be allowed to finish. First, I'd like to address Mr. Peterson and say that I believe your comments reflect a legally theoretical world without any real grounding in reality. And maybe that was indeed what you were trying to say. The majority of towns are requiring some DEP advisory prior to even accepting any applications to do anything. You might want to speak to Mr. Cogger on that subject in his town, and I know that a pad or something from the DEP is a prerequisite to even considering an application complete. One of the issues here is that this council is providing grants to all these towns to work on the conformance process. And a part of that money is being used, in Ms. Swan's words, to work closely with this council. And what that, in my words, work closely means be brainwashed. I mean, this council is out there telling these towns to do exactly what you have just suggested is not actually necessary under the Act. In your legal theoretical world, towns should be able to act. But they're scared to death. Nobody is going to issue a permit or begin this process without knowing that the complexities of this Act, which every single municipal clerk cannot be expected to understand and know and be comfortable with. So they are requiring us, and I know this personally, to go to the cesspool, as Mr. Alstead called it, and jump through an extremely expensive process, which will not be available to most. What's really happening here is the conformance process in connection to the exemptions. I don't think anybody has actually looked through it to this point. The local new conforming regional master plans will be governed not by the Highlands Act, but by local zoning law. Zoning powers that are given to the municipality which predate the Highlands Act. So every single resident with an exemption will now have to go first to their town, because the town zoning, the town's master plan is what rules at this point. If the town has zoned those exemption areas no build, the town has done the taking. And the landowner must now go and sue the town for the taking. That law, the local law under the new conforming master plans, will trump the Highlands Act. It is the way, it is the underlying scheme here to make sure that those exemptions are never real and that those exemptions evaporate in the conforming process. Because nobody ever intended, as we can tell in the build-out analysis, to allow these exemptions to be real. These towns are not going to be faced with the takings lawsuit, since the individual who has lost their exemption in the no-build aspect of their land in the new local master plans will have to sue the towns. The towns will have to incur those legal expenses, and if the resident wins, which they probably will if they have a small enough lot, all beneficial use will be gone. The town, the local taxpayers, will have to pay for that taking. That was always the scheme. That's the way the state will never have to pay the just compensation. Now, I'm not quite sure whether the towns are maybe just beginning to figure this out as they realize that your staff is not allowing the exemptions to be reflected in the local municipal master plans. Enough. My formal comments today. The plan to annihilate the Highlands landowners is falling into place nicely, isn't it? Thanks very much to the crafty Mr. Borden and his extreme green cohorts, with some help from his friend, the chairman. Are the rest of the board members aware of this plan? Let me detail, please. The Green Acres Bond Act of 2009 was recently passed by the legislature and will be on the November ballot for voter approval. But Senator McEwen's bill to extend the June 30th, 2009 appraisal methodology sundown date in the Highlands Act was never brought to the floor for a vote. Bill A3901 was a facade a consciously conceived trick to pretend that the Highlands landowners would participate in the Green Acres preservation programs in the future, but to ensure that they do not. The $600 million Green Acre bond of 2009, if passed by the voters, will de facto exclude all harmed Highland landowners, because the appraisal process will not allow these landowners to be paid for their development rights, which were taken in 2004. If there are any board members who need this explained further, you should not be on this board. The Highlands Regional Master Plan adopted by this council sets the initial price of the Highlands Development Credit at 17.5 cents on the appraised dollar of development right value. At 17.5% of the real property values taken by the Highlands Act. Again, I ask if the members of this council are proud of themselves for their 17.5 cent offer. The recent council approvals of a new parking lot and an electrical transmission line prove, without a doubt, that the professional fee and mitigation costs of gaining approvals to do anything in the Highlands is so high as to be a remedy not available to the lion's share of harmed landowners, many of them ordinary farmers who are the true good stewards of the environment. Let no good deed go unpunished. And now we have the Highlands TDR deed restrictions. The deed restriction gives staff of this council and many other government bureaucracies access to our land, the right to enter our homes and our property. Mr. Borden may devise some obscure non-compliance and extract a further, likely deadly pound of flesh from Highlands landowners. You have no idea what a nightmare it is to envision monsters such as the staff of this council trespassing on my land, denying me the right of my privacy and security of my home, and probably bankrupting me with trivial fines. Welcome to the America of tomorrow. This council's deed restriction has given Big Brother a home in my barn. The deed restriction allows its conveyance to private third parties so that these trespass rights could be purchased by Mr. Pringle, Mr. Olson, Mr. Tittle, Miss Summers, or any of many other extremists who revel, as they do before this council, in further abusing and raping Highlands landowners. The deed restriction also provides this council and the state with right to purchase the underlying land beyond the rights provided in a lien holder's foreclosure proceeding. The goal is, isn't it, to pay 17.5 cents for the restriction and then another nickel for the physical property itself. The deed restriction also puts a limitation on the property owner's right to sell the restricted property to the buyer of their choice. The deed restriction overreaches the Highlands Act and ensures that no one will ever sell the TDR. There's consequently no need to fund the TDR bank, and its Potemkin purpose is reconfirmed. Highland landowners will not be eligible for Green Acres funding without an extension of the appraisal sundown date. So, Mr. Chairman, you are winning your bet with Mr. Smith that you would successfully squash the Highlands landowners and implement the evil Highlands bill for free.
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. And now from the light for me, I just have two comments. We are becoming very concerned about, I recognize the effort on the part of the council by working with municipal officials exclusively to help go through the module process for conformance. But the public has been excluded from this process. And right now, not only the public, but in many cases, municipal officials really don't know what is going on. It will make conformance, I believe, very difficult later on if we do not start an effort to try and inform the public what's going on as towns go through this conformance process so that they are familiar and can participate. I recognize that there is a timeliness involved, but by totally excluding the public, I do not think you are serving the process well. The other thing that I wanted to say is that you have hired a firm to make recommendations and provide guidance on open space issues. And conservation easements are about as close to open space issues as you can get. I would like to be reassured that that firm has been asked to provide input on the easements that you are drafting. I'm sure if they have, you will be given good advice. Thank you.
David Schoenwald, former preservation here. PDR easements can be put on one page. The easement should state exactly what is being paid for. That's to say, the build right. That's all you're buying. You're trying through the process of extraction or simple petty theft to include all other aspects that you can think of, including the right to have a third party stomp on your land to see if, in fact, that thing that they saw from the road is a house, which is all that you have sold to the state, the right to build a house. You don't need people stomping around on other people's land to determine if it's a house or not a house, unless they're stupid. I would also like to bring to your attention a report on a second natural drinking water supply in 2003, right before the Highlands Act was reared its ugly head in drink. And it's New Jersey was well represented there. Jamie Foxx was there, Andrew Chapman was at that time chairman and CEO of New Jersey. And a whole bunch of people speak. And one thing they talk about is the fact that water is cheap, too cheap. And they talk about methods to get people to pay. Right? And that one fellow from Philadelphia, now my stream fills in Muscadet Pond, which goes into the Delaware. So Philadelphia is slurping up some of the water that falls in my way. He talks about a 13% return on equity. I'll take 13% any day of the year. The average from farming is 0.348%, 1/3% return on equity, presuming land value $10,000 per acre. You, of course, are doing your best to take it down to the point where 0.35 on $10,000 an acre will become maybe 3%, because you'll devalue it by 90%. They also speak about stakeholders, and this is a term I've heard here often, stakeholders. The stakeholders they talk about are the water companies and the water users. The people whose land that the water falls on and is collected and distributed to the cities are no part of the stakeholder thing that they talk about, and the same trick goes through here. I don't hear that. Then we have another fellow here, John Huffer, executive director of American Water Association, said a crisis is often needed to order to create a change. And if a crisis situation does exist, he urged listeners to create one. By talking to the public about the crisis that will come for the next generation, if there is a failure to address the problems today. He calls it the throat, three C's. Create the crisis. Communicate the crisis. Culture. Make communication a part of the water culture. So create a crisis even if there is one. Highlands Council technical staff has done that in spades. Again, let's talk about the stakeholders, which are the people who own the land in which the water falls, are completely out of the picture. October 24th, Colorado Springs, New Jersey, 2003, get yourself a copy. I asked a couple of meetings ago about the status of the request, which you granted $23,500 of taxpayers' money to the town of Clinton to study a TDR transfer program within the town of Clinton. It was noted in the notes. I've yet to get a response to what the status of that $23,500 grant is. This was granted in the letter to you of March 28th, 2008, with a four-month program. I would put it in September, October last year. Also, I believe that I would like to know how you came up with water deficit. I would like to know the parameters that you used in terms of groundwater recharge to come up with water deficits. I believe you have used the drought of record, which I think is 1965. I think every year in the Highlands, for those of us who rely on groundwater, is 1965. It's like Groundhog Day for us. 1965 every year, year after year. This makes your calculations on groundwater recharge and availability fraudulent. And I would like to put into the record a copy from Swan of the Township of Lebanon, when she was mayor, dated 12/18/2001, to Van Adds when he was with the Water Supply Authority, about in response to a letter written by Ed Geim, who was a Lebanon Township resident, raising issues about the down zoning at Swan Water Supply Authority. FIFA was part of it too. Got through Lebanon Township, where zoning went from 3 acres to, in effect, really, probably 16 to 20, because they threw a whole bunch of other stuff in this one. 7.5 acre grocery park. They excluded steep slopes and other things from the calculation. Where Van Abb said, and Ed Geim raises a whole bunch of technical questions which were not answered by Van Abb. Not just submitted to the record. So I think your staff is incompetent, except for Mr. Porter, being the one. Mr. Van Abs has a degree in environmental science, he says, from SUNY, and he talks here in his comments back to Swan, more like a political science.
That's
all in favor of adjourn?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you all.
Okay.
Just